if you have a journal, you can look back on the things that you were doing when you were successful and the times that you played well. And it's important to actually look at that. You know, most people don't look back at success. They just look forward to failure. Or they spend a lot of time actually focusing on failure and why they weren't successful, rather than probably a little bit more. The important question is, what do I do when I do it well?
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Hello, and thanks for being with me again today. This is episode 12 of my podcast with some interesting insights and tips for your professional and personal journey, being shared with you by Dr. Carl Morris. Just a quick side note, please notice that this interview was one of my first ones, and apologies for me being quite nervous and for the by now improved audio quality on my end. My guest Carl is one of Europe's leading mind and performance coaches who has worked and achieved success with 6 major winners and over 100 PGA top golfers. He's a best-selling author, creator, and founder of the company The Mind Factor, and has consistently produced outstanding results for clients at all levels of sports and business. And all this with a practical and applicable approach based on the real-world experience, as opposed to the classroom theory. Carl shares a lot about his experiences with sports pros and top business managers. For example, about the importance of where we put our attention, what role the stories play that we keep telling ourselves and live by, and how an exercise helps reflect and develop a blueprint for the brain to follow. You will learn about the equation for performance and how a simple question can help you understand your potential. Off we go. Hey, and welcome, Carl Morris.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, I am super excited to have you here today. Thanks for spending some time with us.
No, it's my great pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the person Carl Morris?
Oh, right. Well, that's a big question to start with. My original background was I was a reasonably good amateur golfer. And upon leaving school with not too many qualifications because I'd concentrated on sports, I decided to become a professional golfer and was spectacularly unsuccessful, really, for the few years in the playing side of things. And that was what really got me interested in first of all, coaching, and then more the sort of mental side of the game. And I went down the more conventional route of coaching first of all, but then I started to see many people suffering the same problems that I had. That they were pretty good in practice and they had good technique, but couldn't seem to transfer those skills onto the golf course. So that's where I became really interested in the psychological approach to golf and to sport, and went away and studied various things and various approaches. And then for a few years wasn't involved in golf, but came back. And then started working with some players, and was lucky, really. I got successful with a couple of players early on, and one of them being Darren Clark, who won a WGC, a World Golf Event, and it kind of springboarded from there, really. And I got other players on board, and I suppose 20 years later, I'm still searching for some answers. So here we are.
Thanks for this quick journey to what have brought you here. You were mentioning the mental aspect.
Yeah.
And you're a performance mind coach.
Yeah.
And you work with a range of clients across sports and business, supporting them to improve their performance and achieving their goals.
Yeah.
Can you explain to us what role the mind plays in all this?
Oh, it plays a huge role, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you see the same issues in business that you do in sport, whereby, you know, some people let's say, for instance, if people have to give presentations to a board, or they have to give presentations in sales, things like that, people who are very knowledgeable about the subject but struggle to deliver that under a pressure situation, I think there's a whole different approach and different category of leadership and the way that mind plays a role in that. But fundamentally, Gina, I would say my approach really with the mental side of sport and business comes very much down to one single word, which, you know, I say to the clients that I have that, you know, you can have the complicated version or you can have the simple version, and I much prefer the simple version because I find it quite effective, and that word is attention. And as human beings, I think in any single endeavor that we have, be that trying to play good golf or close a business deal or work on a project or whatever it may be, your attention is always in one of two places. It's either on something that's useful to you or something that's useless. And I think, you know, we don't pay enough attention to what our attention is on, because when we have the ability to direct our attention appropriately for the task that we have, some pretty amazing things can happen. So whenever I work with anybody, that's the key area, really. I'm trying to find out what that person habitually puts their attention on, and I've given the simple version. Obviously, it does become more complicated than that but that is the fundamental word that I look at is attention.
Mm-hmm. And is there like a key thing that can help someone to identify for themselves where their current attention really is?
First of all, what they need to do is look at another sort of subsection of that, which is what I call the story. And basically, as human beings, we are all just a collection of stories. This is based on the work of a chap called Timothy Wilson, who wrote a wonderful book called Redirect. I would recommend anybody listening to this podcast to get hold of a copy of that. It's the most influential book I've ever read. And altered my thinking tremendously. And Redirect, the subtitle is The Stories That We Live By. And basically, Wilson proposes that we are this collection of stories, the things that we continually tell ourselves, the stories that we keep repeating about ourselves and our capabilities. And it's amazing when you get people to sort of just step back and reflect on, let's say, for instance, a golfer, you know, you get a golfer to reflect on the story he tells himself or herself about, you know, his capability in certain parts of the game, putting, his capability under pressure. And then when we identify what that person's story is, or stories, we can then sort of say, well, okay, where are you putting your attention to actually keep the story as it is? And then we look at, okay, well, what story would you like to have? What would be the future that you'd want? What's the narrative that you want to live by in the future? And then you link attention with that.
So it really comes back to the way we communicate with ourselves in our mind.
Absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing, Gina, about stories is that for most of us, they are very, very unconscious, because we've repeated themselves so many times that we don't even know that they're there. But when you actually get people to reflect and look at the way they communicate with themselves and the stories that they keep repeating, I mean, there's a classic one where there was an experiment done. I think it was a guy called Richard Wiseman, who did a study on luck, and he wanted to find out did luck exist. And he did various experiments and, you know, set various things up. And, you know, his basic conclusion was that people who could consider themselves lucky, people who gave themselves the story that they were lucky, were basically lucky because that story that they'd given themselves made them more aware of opportunities, and they, you know, they looked out for meetings with people, and they looked for opportunities. Mm-hmm. Where the people who had the story that they were unlucky kind of shut themselves down to opportunity and said to themselves, oh, you know, good things never happen to me, and I never meet the right person. But the objective world was the same, but the subjective experience dependent on the story was vastly different.
Super interesting. Would you say that this is one of the number one reasons or block that stops people from taking actual decisions?
absolutely.
Sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, you know, if somebody has a story that, you know, that they are not particularly, let's say somebody has the story that they're not particularly good at giving presentations because of something that happened way back in junior school, you know, and they've carried that story around with them for so many years, they will do all sorts of things to avoid those situations where they have to speak in public. So the original story, the original experience binds their experience and continues to play out 20, 30, 40 years later. But yeah, when you unpick the story and sort of get them to reflect on it and say, well, it was just one experience when you were 8 years of age and you were asked to speak and you weren't prepared for it. And, you know, you can unpick the story and start to recreate a new one, which is really exciting, I think, for people. And I think the very framed story is a good one as well, you know, because we've all been brought up with stories. You know, civilization is built on stories. And when you get people to consider that you could change your story in the future, it becomes really exciting.
Yeah, and it seems to be a key, or it seems to play a big role in personal development. And also not being able to develop and to do the next step.
There's a great exercise in Timothy Wilson's book, Redirect, and he calls it the best possible self exercise. And you know, one of the things that you would do is create a future story, and in that story you describe the person that you would want to be in the future, and it's a very detailed writing exercise, and part of it you describe the way that you would respond to setbacks, and you describe the way you would respond to other people, and how you would start to change your own story. And one of the most powerful things I find is that if you get somebody to do this writing exercise, it's kind of a blueprint for the brain to follow. You know, you then have a map, a route, a direction that you can go down. And, you know, I've certainly done that with certain, you know, business clients, because you can, you know, a company, a business has a story, you know, and that story may be a very positive one, or it may be a negative one, or it may have become a negative one. And, you know, when you get them to sort of sit down and say, well, what's the story that you would want the company to have in the future? How would you want people to talk about this company if they were telling stories to other people? You know, so it's this simple idea of a story and attention can sort of move off into all sorts of interesting directions.
Yeah, because it links our focus. It's really nice to talk about all this in terms of the own story that you tell yourself. I really like that. The other big element, or the key of your profession, is the area of performance. How do you define performance?
I would define another. Big influence of mine, Timothy Galway, who wrote a book called The Inner Game of Golf way back in the 1970s, he had a simple formula. He said that performance equals potential minus interference. So, you know, we all have a potential that we kind of feel that we could perform to, but if you're not performing anywhere near to that potential, there's some interference there. And you know, as we've already alluded to, I don't think that the one thing that performance will be interfered by is what you have your attention on. So, you know, if somebody feels that their ability to perform is way below what it should be or what they're capable of, and I try and get very interested in what is interfering with that, what is getting in the way, what's your attention on that's holding you back, and that then ties in with the whole area of training as well. You know, I think we've become so much more knowledgeable now about training in sport, and certainly in golf, and the best ways to approach your training. So there's a big buzzword in golf at the moment: transferability. You know, does the thing that you do in practice, does it transfer into the real world? Because if it doesn't transfer, well, there's not much point doing it in practice, you know. So I think we can all look probably a little bit closer at the things that we do on a daily basis, the training that we do, the work that we do, and ask, is it the most efficient thing that we can possibly do to get us closer to the goals that we have?
Yeah, so you just talked us through one side of the equation. How would you say can someone figure out what his or her potential is?
Again, a good question there. I think, you know, some people say anything is possible, which I'm a little bit cautious on that one. You know, with the best will in the world, if I decide I want to win the 100 meters. The 100 meters race at the Olympics the next time it comes around. At 52 years of age, I don't think that's possible anymore with the best mindset in the world, that there's certain physical limitations on that. so as much as I like the idea that anything is possible, I'm not quite sure that's the case. But the question that I get players to ask is, what is possible? I think that is a wonderful question. You know, what is possible with your game? What is possible with your business? What is possible with your fitness? And, I try and coach people to answer that in a way that the possibilities are probably just slightly further out than they currently think that they are, without being delusional, as I say, without thinking that they could do something that, you know, is genetically and physically impossible. So I think that is one of the most wonderful questions that you can ever possibly explore. What is possible? Because that will get you much closer to your true potential.
Yeah, what a great question to ask.
It's a wonderful question. It's a wonderful question to ask in lots and lots of different areas.
Is there a story you can share of someone who managed, turning around, and maybe there was a special moment of breakthrough for this person? Is there any little story that you can share with us?
Probably the most famous one that happened was again fortunate, really, was that a South African golfer who I worked with 10 years ago, and he was having trouble in major tournaments. He'd never actually won a major tournament. Sorry, he'd never actually made a cut. He never got past the halfway stage in a major event. In golf, there's four major tournaments each year, and those are the ones that all the players aspire to win. And we got together and we talked all about attention, about what his attention was on. And he told me that he would play many shots in a round and his attention would wander away. He would start thinking about way off into the future and just random thoughts would come into his head and all the rest of it. And without dragging the story out too far, we came up with an idea that a colour for him would represent concentration. Mm-hmm. And the colour for him that would represent concentration, the way he wanted his mind to be on a golf shot, was red. And we created that association, and then we sort of said, well, as a reminder that you are going to focus on each shot, why don't a golfer would wear a glove on the left hand, and he put a dot on his glove on his left hand, a red dot. And what he did for that particular Open, it was the British Open at St Andrews in 2010. And for every shot that he played for the entire 4 days, before every shot, he very simply looked at that red dot on his glove. And that was a trigger. That was a focus of attention. That was a trigger to tell him to go through his routine for that particular shot. And he did that religiously for those four rounds. And he won the British Open at St Andrews by seven shots, which was a nice performance. And the red dot got quite a lot of coverage around the world because one of the commentators on TV noticed that he kept looking at this red dot and they didn't really understand what he was doing. So it got quite a lot of publicity afterwards. And the funny side of the story is that afterwards, because of the way golfers think, I started to see quite a few people wearing white gloves with red dots on the gloves, and I'm sure most of them had no idea what it was all about, but they were trying to use it anyway.
that's funny. Just now I have a picture in my head, all these golfers, looking at their gloves, yeah, looking at them, nothing happening. In your opinion, what are the key factors that enable someone achieve his or her professional and personal life goals?
The single most important thing is to get very, very clear on what I call the answer to this question: what does a good day look like? because, you know, we set these goals and we set these intentions, which are great. You've got to set a direction. You've got to look at your story. But all of those things are off in the future. And the only thing really that we have any kind of slight amount of control over is what we're going to do today. And I have this theory, this idea, this principle of what I call the accumulation of good days, that if you put enough good days together, some really, really interesting things can happen. Now, the good days might be focused on fitness or business or sport or whatever, but most people, they'll go off into the future and they'll create these ideas of what they want to achieve, but they don't get any clarity on what a good day today looks like. And I try and get them really quite focused and detailed on that, because a good day needs to have a good start. So what are the things that you do, the very first thing that you do when you get up out of bed in the morning? You know, most of us are extremely dehydrated. So, you know, I think it's a really great idea to drink really quite a lot of water immediately that you get up and bathe your brain, you know, in the liquid that it craves, the water that it craves, because, you know, an efficient brain can only be as efficient as the structures and the cellular structures that it's operating with. And then sort of say, well, you know, what are the things that you start to do the day? Do you get clarity on what are the really important things that you do in that day? And I get very detailed with people on their environment. I think people need to look really, really, really closely at the environment that they're in on a daily basis, because whether it's your office at home or the people that you're with or the business that you're in or the sport that you're in, the people that you are with and the environment that you're in will scream so loudly at you. It will influence your behavior like you cannot believe. And I think that's what great managers do in football and other sports. You know, they create a great environment. They are maybe the head of that environment. But you cannot afford to not look at the detail. You know, even to the extent if you have an office at home and you look at the pictures on the walls and the way the office is arranged, and it will give you all kinds of messages. There's another book I would recommend people get. I mean, The Amazon list is already too long already.
No, I will put all the links to the show notes. Thanks a lot for sharing. So go ahead.
Another essential book that people read is a book by John Barge, B-A-R-G-H. He was on my podcast. He's a wonderful man. He's a Yale professor, and he wrote a book called Before You Know It, The Unconscious Reasons Why We Do What We Do. Mm-hmm. And basically, John Barge talks about how the environment is constantly triggering us to perform certain behaviors that we don't even realize. And if you're going to be efficient on a daily basis, it really is worth looking at your environment and the messages that that environment gives. And, you know, just some subtle shifts in, you know, the pictures in your office, as I say, and the way your office is arranged and the people that you interact with. You know, and I say to a lot of people in sports, sometimes you have to make some difficult decisions with the people that you interact with the most, because I'm a great believer that people either give you energy or they take energy away from you. And I think if you spend too much time around people who drain you of energy, that can be very, very destructive for you. So, you know, there's in that simple question, what does a good day look like? There's a lot of things that you need to look at and get really clear on it. But, you know, I would suggest to people that you just start at the beginning. Just ask yourself, are you starting the day the right way? And, you know, you eventually get to the point, well, are you concluding the day in the right way? There's little rituals I get players to go through last thing at night to conclude the day. You know, I think sleep is super important. There's more and more research coming out now about, you know, how deadly poor sleep patterns and habits are. You know, so these are all the things that you can look at to get a lot closer to your potential.
Thanks a lot. So in all these years, and with all the work and diverse people that you have been working with, and yeah, every one of them having their individual goals, what surprised you personally the most?
I think the thing that never ceases to amaze me with human beings, and we're all probably a bit guilty of it, is that human beings very often find things that work and then they stop doing them. You know, with you know, I see that at the gym. I train a lot, and I, you know, occasionally I'll people come in, and I have one of my rituals, which again I'd recommend for everybody if you get the opportunity. I think one of the most beneficial things that you can do for your health is having saunas on a regular basis. I take a sauna every possible day that I can when I'm around, and I'll sit in the sauna and chat away with people, and you know, very often somebody will come in and say, "Oh, I've not been here for a while," you know. I've not felt like it, but I feel brilliant today. I feel fantastic that I've come here and I've trained, and I always smile to myself, thinking, we're not wired correctly, really. That we, you know, something that is so good for you to take physical exercise, that we do it, and then we find ways of not doing it, and do other things that we feel instant gratification for, but feel lousy afterwards. You know,
how would you explain this? The reason that people are doing this.
I think, you know, I think if you drill into the brain, you know, the human brain is wired for familiarity. You know, it tends to, I think from sort of the ancient part of the brain still is very, very much geared towards survival. And, you know, that part of the brain that says, well, if I did the same thing that I did yesterday, I may survive today, which was very useful for us when we were roaming around in caves, but it's very much an outdated part of the human brain. So, you know, I think that in the effort to change what we do, we are coming up against that part of the brain that does like familiarity. It does like to repeat patterns. So that's why, you know, the point of sort of looking at that, the individual day is such an important one. So you home in on a couple of specific things and just try and create some momentum by working on a couple of ideas on given days that you can start to do, that you start to, excuse me, you start to build these changes gradually.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, or did you ever observe good characteristics and habits that are common between successful sports pros and managers?
Yeah, I do think maybe becoming a little bit obsolete in the modern world, you know, unfortunately. I'm not the most technologically advanced person in the world, but I would say an overwhelming number of players that I've worked with who have been successful. You know, I can think of a couple of footballers and cricketers and golfers and business people. One correlation seems to be a journal, you know, the ability to actually write things down. You know, one very, very simple thing that I'll get people to do is if they have a journal, is backing up this idea of accumulating good days, is have intentions for that day, you know, have real clarity. And it's not so much a to-do list. I don't really like to-do lists. It's you know, I like people to answer the question, what am I committed to today? And, you know, it doesn't have to be the same thing every day, and it might only just be a couple of things that you write down. But that sort of physical act of writing down in your journal what you intend to do today seems to be a very, very powerful driver of behavior. And it, you know, over the years, only anecdotally from my side of things, that the ability to keep a journal and write down and be able to also reflect. You know, I say to people that success has a trail behind it, but we don't look for it. So it's very important to, if you have a journal, you can look back on the things that you were doing when you were successful and the times that you played well. And it's important to actually look at that. You know, most people don't look back at success. They just look forward to failure, or they spend a lot of time actually focusing on failure and why they weren't successful, rather than probably a little bit more, the important question is, what do I do when I do it well?
And what do I do now, in the here and now, and not?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what do I need to do today? That's such an important question, because, you know, if you've had a bad performance, it's very easy to just sit and think about it. And if you've had a bad run of results in whatever arena of life, but, you know, ultimately the only thing that's going to change your output, the only thing that's going to change your result, are your actions, the things that you actually do. You know, and it's I've been lucky to write a few books, and I think writing a book is a great example. You know, that everybody says, oh, I've got a book in me, I'm going to write a book, and it's okay, fine, well, yeah, let me know when you finish, sort of thing. and you know, I'm sure everybody does have a book in them, but you've got to have that intention, but then the actions and you know, I've found if the spells when I've been writing a book, they're just having the daily discipline of saying, right, I'm just going to write 200 words every day, you know, and the brain can get its head around that. And 200 words, it never remains 200 words. It always ends up a lot more than that. But the actual intention to do 200 words gets you moving. It gets you actually taking action. And that's the key thing. It's so many things in life that we know what to do. We know the right thing to do. We know what we need to do for our business. We know what we need to do for our fitness. We know what we need to do for our sport. But it's actually getting ourselves to do it. And it's the beginning of the action. It's kind of tricking the brain in a way, getting the brain to think, oh yeah, I'll buy into that. I'll do 200 words. Whereas if you sit down and think, oh right, I've got to write a chapter today, that's when people get stuck, because they put so much pressure on this big goal of writing a chapter of a book, and they get stuck very quickly, and then they can very easily give up on that. And I think writing a book is a great metaphor for life itself, really, you know.
Yeah.
have clarity what the book's going to be about, but actually if you're going to write the book, you need to start today, and you need to put a few words down on paper. And even if you only get a few sentences, you've actually done something, you've achieved something today, so you've accumulated a day. And you know, it's amazing how many words you can write in 30 days, for instance. You know, if you sit down and, you know, those 200 words become 1,000 in 30 days' time, you've 30,000 words, you've thick end of a book or half a book or whatever. So I think writing a book is just a very, very good frame for life itself.
And what you're saying is that the key is just getting started somewhere.
100% in anything. You know, I do remember, and I kind of link this with what John Barge had to say. A guy told me in America years ago that he used to have what he called the 30 second exercise program. Mm-hmm. And you know, as soon as he said that, I thought, wow, that sounds like 30 seconds. what you do in 30 seconds? It must be pretty intense. But he then went on to explain that what he did was that he would have his running shoes by his bed. So again, environment, setting up the environment. And as he got out of bed, he would put his running shoes on, he'd put his shorts on and his training top, excuse me. And he would say to himself, I've just got to run for 30 seconds. So of course he would get out of the house and he'd start running for 30 seconds, and he would never stop at 30 seconds. He would just keep running. But it was a great way that he kind of tricked his brain into getting moving. So I've always remembered that, and I think that's a great example of it, creating the environment and understanding attention and understanding story and putting all of it together just to get you moving every day. And you know, you've accumulated part of a good day if you've gone for a run, if you think that's important for you.
Very nice example. Thanks a lot for sharing. You were talking about looking back in another context now, but if you would be looking back, what advice would you give your younger self and why?
I would say not to take things quite so seriously, not to be too focused on immediate results, be far more mindful and aware of what you enjoy, and you know, be that in sport or whatever. If you enjoy something, make sure that you reflect on it afterwards. I think also I'll tell the other younger self to maybe make some decisions about people that you spend time with, some challenging decisions maybe. But yeah, I think the other thing would be some of the things that you know, you maybe get wrapped up in goals wise, and maybe the things that you think that you want, and maybe that's not the reality of it. So you know, I'd sort of say get really clear on what's important to you, what you enjoy, and the people that you spend time with.
And looking at today, what drives and what motivates you to keep going when it's really tough?
30 seconds of exercise. I think we all, you know, we all have things that come along. I mean, I've just recently lost my mother. My mother died only a couple of weeks ago, and it's been a very tough 12 months, to be honest.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, she had dementia, and You know, just to see somebody, it's just the worst. Every disease is terrible, but my goodness, dementia is just a horrible, horrible experience. She had dementia and Alzheimer's, mixed dementia, and just to see somebody robbed of their, you know, personality, physical deterioration. So, you know, I had to, in the past 12 months, I would, whenever I was not away working, I would go over to the care home that she was in for the last 12 months every day, and it was tough to keep going there, you know, just to see this deterioration. But you know, I had to sort of take some of my own medicine, and there were many times that I really didn't feel like doing any exercise. But I think that's one of the things that really helped me through this last 12 months is the days when I absolutely, the last thing I wanted to do was to exercise. I did manage to find ways of getting myself to the gym and getting moving, and it was surprising how much better I felt when I did that, and my head was a lot clearer, and you know, I felt as though at least I'd achieved something within that day.
And in today's life, what would you say is non-negotiable for you?
I think as we've said, is just having clarity on what a good day looks like. I'm more certain than ever that, you know, yes, it's wonderful to have goals, it's great to have a direction, it's great to have clarity, but you need to get really clear on, you know, what are the things that are important to you on a daily basis. And I'll promise you, it's, in many ways, it's far simpler than you ever think. You know, it can be just some exercise, it can be being absorbed in a project for a couple of hours, it can be a good conversation with your wife or your husband or your partner or whatever. You know, it can be, you know, I still I love, you know, cricket's my passion, and it was there's days when it's hard for me not to sit in front of the TV too long, but I'll allocate some time to watch some cricket, and just, you know, just spending an hour, half an hour watching that. And you know, if it's planned, I feel, you know, it's great to sort of be grateful for those opportunities, really. So that would be the non-negotiable, really, is being clear, being really, really clear on what's important to you, and what does that good day look like.
And maybe one last question. Carl, what does a good day look like for you?
What does a good day look like for me? That's what there's a phrase in English where they say, "Physician, heal thyself," where the doctor needs to give his own prescription. I would say a good day definitely has a good start to it. I'm getting better at that. You know, I get up. I love the summer months when it's light in the morning. I get up pretty early. I'll drink some water. I always, that's such a simple act. I mentioned it earlier. I'd recommend for everybody to begin to do that. You know, take anything up to a liter of water first thing in the morning.
Liter.
Yeah, anything up to that. I mean, don't start with a liter. Just build your way up to that. But you know, you will feel so much better by hydrating yourself in the morning. And then I'll usually train if I get if I'm not away or I'm working. I'll usually go to the gym and train. I'm getting better with food. I'm not perfect by any means, but I'm getting better. And again, I feel good when I fuel myself correctly. We're just in the process at the moment. We wrote a book last year called The Lost Art of Putting. It's a golf book that's become pretty successful. We've got some nice reviews on Amazon, and we're just completing the second one now. So,
congrats.
The days have been involved with some writing, and I do really enjoy working with clients. I do love working one-to-one with people, and I give quite a lot of presentations. So often the day will include a presentation somewhere in the world. So it's quite varied, really, Gina. So I've not given a very good answer to that, but hopefully you've got a flavor of what it looks like.
Carl, thanks so much for sharing all these amazing insights and stories with us from your life and your experience.
It's my great pleasure. I've really enjoyed the chat. You know, I'm just looking at the time. The time's disappeared very quickly, which is always a good sign.
I agree. So maybe we talk to each other again in the future soon. And all the best to you and your family.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. you've enjoyed this interview and know someone for whom this topic is relevant and interesting for, someone you personally wish for to find his or her path and start the journey, then I'm super happy if you would share this podcast with him or her. Thank you and warm regards from Düsseldorf in Germany. Bye.